Welcome to the Work Science Center podcast, brought to you by the Work Science Center of the Georgia Institute of Technology. I'm your host, Keaton Fletcher. You can find more about the Work Science Center at our website, www.worksciencecenter.gatech.edu. In today's podcast, I talk with Ali Greenberg, founder of The Broad. The Broad is a co-working and community space in Richmond, Virginia, designed for women and gender minorities to help facilitate professional and personal growth in relationships. Ali and I discuss what it means to design a space with women in mind and how science can help facilitate the success of women and gender minorities in the modern workforce. All right, Ali, thanks for joining me today. So to start off, could you just tell me a bit about your background and how you came to establish The Broad?
Yeah, so my background is a pretty traditional liberal arts background. Went to Washington and Lee, pretty broad education in all things liberal arts. And after graduation, I moved to New York, where I worked as a strategist in advertising agencies. So background really became a lot of consumer research and understanding what makes people tick and how to connect more authentically between brands and consumers. So after about 4 years in New York, I was ready for a change, and I ended up settling in Richmond, Virginia after just kind of taking a road trip to a lot of different cities and finding this one, and it was entrepreneurial and creative and felt just like a palpable energy in the air. So settled into Richmond, and about 6 months in was when The Broad became an idea. I had been spending a few months working out of the existing co-working spaces that were here, which were great for a variety of reasons, but primarily because I had a project that I was working on as a freelancer that was actually full-time. So my first 2 months there, it made a lot of sense to be at this space and to be paying a premium for it. But as soon as that project was over, I was basically never going to have a similar project again. It was a pretty rare thing in my line of work. So I found myself quickly overpaying for a space that I really didn't need. And what I was really getting was co-working instead of what I thought co-working was, which was more of a community. So that was my first inkling that, hey, maybe there's something else in this area that would be beneficial, because I had this idea of what I thought about a co-working space. And what I found that it was great. It just was different. They were basically cool, sexier office buildings. And I was missing the co part of it, the community and the connections that I really needed. I didn't need a workspace. I needed friends. I was brand new to a city. I needed connections. So that was where I first started thinking about maybe there's a better way to be doing this. And as far as how The Broad came about in particular, I used that consumer research background and I did focus groups. I ran surveys. I did competitive research. And then ended up kind of building the idea around three main pillars. One, that co-working versus community disconnect that I saw. The second one being that there were a lot of events in the city, but not a lot of curation around them. And then the third being that there was a lot of networking, but not a lot of actual connections. And those three things felt like a really natural fit for a central place, yet they weren't really being met by anything here. And then add to that just the need and the potential of women's spaces. And it seemed like a perfect fit. So saw some different spaces opening up in other cities that have the same model as us. And those were top of mind. And I was already using them as case studies for clients and decided to just test and see if people were interested in it here. And based on our research, they were.
So much to talk about and so much to unpack. Yeah. Real briefly, for those of our listeners who aren't familiar, what exactly is a co-working space? And then you sort of talk about this difference between co-working and that community. So could you just give me a little more there?
Absolutely. So primarily, co-working is really office space. There are communal areas, but for the most part, when you think about the WeWorks of the world, they are very nicely designed shared office spaces. So it's really great places with kegs and beer and great coffee and fun couches. But then you walk down a hallway and it's lined with glass doors where people have offices of 1 to 5 people behind it. So you have this community and you're sharing a resource and it's a subscription model. So it seems a little bit more modern, but ultimately what it is office space. There are some other spaces that are more focused truly on the co-working part of it and being more of a community, which take on a little bit more of that coffee shop vibe, or maybe like the main floor at a library at school, that kind of stuff, a common house type of area. But for the most part, the big businesses that we talk about when we talk about co-working are really in the business of office space rentals.
And so who's using these office spaces, these co-working spaces, or the Broad?
Yeah, so I think we have a pretty different market at the Broad compared to these traditional spaces. I see us as in the same ecosystem, but not even competitors, because the people that come to us are at least the work people, because actually only about a third of our members even are here for the co-working. They are remote workers. They're generally working for themselves for a larger company, or they are just kind of popping in and out on side projects. Whereas they might be a great fit for other traditional workspaces, co-working spaces, but what you see there mostly is more nimble businesses that are maybe 1 to 3 person teams that are looking for a more flexible lease. Commercial leases can often be quite long. They require a build out. So these co-working spaces allow companies to have just more flexibility, both within their budget and within their facility. You don't have to worry about needing a conference room that only gets utilized 10% of the time and you're paying that extra premium for it, when you can just rent or book a couple hours at the conference room as part of your membership. So I would say for the most part, co-working spaces are really geared towards more nimble companies that are looking for alternatives from the traditional commercial leasing.
And so you're so much more than just a co-working space, especially if only a third of your members are there for the co-working space. So what else does the Broad do?
Yeah, so about a third of our members work with us. We have no dedicated desks and no offices. So we really are for the people that are looking for an alternative to the coffee shop or to their home office. And then on the side of that, we kind of are a space where you don't just bring your work self, but you bring your whole self to the Broad. So we call ourselves a workspace and social club. I often use the term community center, and really just sort of a home base or headquarters for the women of our community. And we do everything from weekly yoga classes to office hours with professional service providers, whether they be accountants or lawyers. They're on site every single week to answer questions from our members, totally inclusive of membership. We do perks and discounts at local businesses that are owned by local women. We have roundtables and panels and workshops and classes. We're doing a Spanish class starting in September. All sorts of really fun stuff, in addition to just social events and book clubs and informal meetups. So really a place that, yes, you can bring your business self to, and we can have a workshop on how to pick a location for your business, or how to, you know, get your legal affairs in order to start up a business. But we also talk about what it means to be pregnant, what it means to buy your first house, how to buy ethical fashion, really just about your whole self in the space.
When you were designing the Broad, what thought process went into the space itself? Because you're trying to fit a lot of these different aspects into a very functional space. What did you consider? What kind of did you have to give up on?
Absolutely. Yep. It was definitely a battle of form and function, because workspaces, you know, there's this huge conversation around open floor plans and what is actually productive. And we wanted to make sure that the space that we had was utilized as best as we can. So we have 2,500 square feet initially. We just actually expanded an additional 700 square feet in a private space that we use for workshops and rentals. But our main space is essentially a loft. So beautiful, great architectural details, lots of history. And then you realize, oh, wow, it's really loud when I walk in here, or there's no door to go behind. So wanting to make sure that we can create pockets of privacy as well as areas to collaborate wherever possible. So we were really, really focused on that, making sure that there were various seating options, from places that you can lounge and put your feet up to soft surfaces, hard surfaces, places you can stand and work, places that you can collaborate, places that you can hide away and no one will bother you. So really trying to make sure that each space worked as hard as it could for us. It means that when we went into the bathroom, we made sure that the amenities were fully stocked in there, that it has everything that you could imagine that you might need throughout the day. It means that the temperature is something that we think about as a huge design cue. Most public spaces are heated or cooled really to a decades old thermal comfort equation that was developed, I believe, in the 60s by a guy named Fanger. And it was with the best of intentions, but it was based on the average, basically, mass of a 40-year-old man in 1960 and his comfort. So it means that women are always just freezing wherever we go. And in the office, you'll always see people with their sweaters and blankets. So making sure that it's comfortable in here, and just those small design cues that let you know that it's a space built for you. I'm sitting right now in our breather room, which is a private space. You see like the dim lighting. I've got diapers in a bin next to me. It's a place that you can nurse comfortably. You can pump comfortably. You can cry comfortably. You can take a phone call or have an interview comfortably. And just knowing that we need those spaces that aren't just afterthoughts and checking the box of, hey, we need a pumping room because that's legally required, but it's actually a place that you feel restorative here.
It sounds like really integrated into the space and integrated into your thoughts is the fact that this is a space for women. And so mm-hmm. what do you think is important that people don't necessarily understand about women in the modern workplace? I mean, obviously, there's a lot of conversation going around what it means to be a woman in the modern workforce, but what's your take on it?
My take on it is that it's still a huge conversation and something that we're going to be working on for a really long time. Spaces like this are so essential because they provide us an opportunity to talk about it and to have conversations and to hold space for that conversation when often it was kind of like, hey, brush it aside. Things are better. Shouldn't we just be happier that they're better? But the truth is yesterday was Black Women's Equal Pay Day, which is August 6th. So that's the date of the year that it takes for a Black woman to make the same as the white man did the year before, which obviously comes way later than general Women's Equal Pay Day because white women, we make more. So just knowing that these things are very real data points and we need to be aware of the reality and not just think that, hey, now that we have parental leave that we're solved, there's still a lot of work to be done. And overall, when you walk into a space and you walk into your office, that is probably a building that was designed by a man. The architect was probably a man. The person in purchasing who was procuring even the seats and the height of everything was probably a man, just based on kind of institutional history. So just being aware that women make up such a huge percentage of the workforce, but we still are not in the positions of power, or even not even power, but just decision making when it comes to simple things like purchasing. And those design elements and the cues that you see in the spaces that you exist in are really important and they're really impactful. And when you walk into the Broad, it was designed by a woman and the lighting's by a woman and the murals on the wall. And when you see our soundtrack, it is all women. And it's just sort of a pervasive understanding that you are not only welcome here, but you're represented here. And that's something that we don't see in most places.
Relatedly, throughout this conversation, you're very in tune with the science or studies that have been published. One, where do you go for this information? I feel like being on the scientist side, we do things, we publish them in regular academic journals, and they're not necessarily the most easily accessible for people who actually would use it, like you. And then two, I know that we've run into this, especially in psychology, less so in modern times, but a lot of the studies are done either entirely on men or without that emphasis on women. So when you were trying to create the Broad, was there anything that was like empirically based for women? What can the science do to help you?
Yeah, I don't think that there is a ton. I mean, we know, especially in the medical sciences, right? They don't even test on women most of the time, based on this like old paternal idea that it's like dangerous for our bodies and might sacrifice our fertility. So there's so many things that just don't even, like women just literally aren't even part of the conversation. So I think the sciences can do such a better job because they're basically starting from zero of including women in the dialogue, but in particular, including an intersectional viewpoint. And I know it's a lot to go from zero to understanding all aspects of the gender spectrum because baby steps are sometimes needed. But when we use the term women, we spell it with an X, and that is meant to be truly inclusive, to understand that gender is not just a binary thing. It's not even a genetic thing or a genital thing. It really represents everyone. So the broad, yes, we're making space for women and women with an X, but really we're making space for women and gender minorities as our larger kind of raison d'etre. And when we think about that, it's still a new concept, but it's something super important to just even if we're not ready to study it in the sciences, even if we don't yet have quite the terminology, just being able to acknowledge that and say, hey, we know that this hasn't included everyone and we know that this is a limited viewpoint, I think goes a long way to just acknowledging that there's more out there still to learn. But as far as where I do go for information, it definitely is where the science has trickled down to the pop culture almost of the Fast Company articles and the Forbes and the Entrepreneur and Harvard Business Review, all that kind of stuff that takes some of the more qualitative data, I would say. Cause yeah, it's kind of hard to access a lot of the other psychological stuff, but we've been fortunate, at least with the broad, that co-working has been such a popular business trend. So you can learn a lot from trend pieces that are going on. And then also in particular, the focus on women's spaces in the last year and a half to 2 years has really taken off. So we're always, seeing what's going on in those areas, as well as collaborating among other spaces. So what's really cool in particular for women is that we are now trying to be much more collaborative rather than competitive. And I talk to people in Seattle that run the Riveter. I talk to people in Atlanta that run Circle and Moon. And we're doing all of these similar things, but in vastly different geographies, and being able to share learnings and what our members are actually needing is hugely helpful in a way that I don't think the WeWorks of the world are doing with their competitors.
So are there questions that as you're thinking forward for the broad that you kind of wish science could help you answer?
I think that if we can quantify the old boys club, that would be great. I don't know how we do that. I don't know how you quantify the social, political, and economic impact that comes from traditionally male dominated networks, whether they are in the C-suite or the bank or the country club. But that is essentially what we're trying to do here. It is most directly being manifested through a workspace as the most understandable avenue, but we're so much more than that. And ultimately what we're trying to do is make space for women in all aspects of the world, and understanding that professional power is economic power, which trickles down. So trying to understand how we could quantify what even not even monetarily, but psychologically and emotionally, what are the impacts on that privilege that men have been afforded, in particular white men have been afforded in the workplace and in social networks that women or people of color or gender minorities have just not been afforded, because even until a couple of years ago, gender minorities were hardly even recognized. So being able to think about that would be very interesting, but it's also very hard to quantify social capital. But I think that would be really, really interesting, especially in a post lean in world where women are talking more about career advancement and collaboration and not fighting for one seat at the table, but expanding the table. It'll be really interesting to see how things will shift.
What's your take on it? Where do you think things are headed?
I hope that we are really headed to a larger table. I think spaces like the Broad or the Wing or the Riveter, any of these spaces are really built upon that concept of holding space for each other, and really the idea of shine theory, and which is essentially that not only do I shine when you shine because it radiates on me, but I cannot shine if you don't. And that creates sort of a bond and an imperative to help each other succeed, rather than previously we might have needed the other person to fail in order for us to get a leg up. So that idea of shine theory and even amplification, which is quite similar that you saw in the Obama administration, where the women in the cabinet meetings would literally repeat what the other person said and said, as Sarah said, I believe this, in order to amplify that voice because it was often getting drowned out. So those kinds of things, and learning that we can collaborate and really work together rather than work against each other, I think is really, really powerful. And knowing that millennials will be taking over the workforce quite soon, and we have different views of just work-life balance in general, my hope is that it will keep getting, we will necessitate more creative solutions to these longstanding problems. But it's hard. But that's why last night we hosted a negotiation workshop where we had 12 members and guests sit around drinking some wine, because it's okay to mix both, and talk about how we negotiate salaries and why it's okay to let there be silence in that conversation and why that's power. And really just holding space for all the conversations and holding space for each other is going to be huge. And I do hope that that is the future, and we'll keep working hard to make that happen here.
Anything you want to add?
Really just that design matters. And yes, it matters in physical spaces and noise and, you know, comfort of a space so that there's productivity. But I think more so than anything, in just acknowledgement of someone's existence and validation that they matter in a space. So you can't be what you can't see. And I don't think you can be a productive employee, and you can't be a truly creative person if your environment has not been built to cultivate that. And we're hoping to do that here. And I think so many spaces can benefit from just not even huge differences, but just slight shifts, or even just once in a while asking, hey, why is it that we do that? And if we think that there's a better way, or if we think there's room for improvement, maybe just ask the people that will be impacted rather than making assumptions on their behalf. So until the decisions are made by those that are being designed for, then the design will never be right.
So where can people find you in the broad?
The broad can be found at We The Broad on Instagram and Facebook, and wethebroad.com online.
Thank you so much, Allie. This was really helpful, and I'm sure other people will find it just as helpful as I did.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for reaching out, Keaton. It's great to chat with you. Thank you.